At the top of our program today, a host of challenges associated with Michigan's prison system make corrections one of the state's biggest and most persistent issues. Michigan has around 43,000 prisoners in its state system. They reside in 31 state prisons and affiliated health care facilities. No discussion of Michigan corrections lasts long without the topic of its dollar cost coming up. Supervision and care of those inmates costs the state about $2 billion a year in total. As a percentage of its general fund budget, no state spends more than Michigan. It's an expenditure that many feel is unsustainable despite a recent drop in the number of prisoners. Reporter Ted Roloffs writes at length about these challenges in the latest edition of Bridge Magazine. He joins us now. Welcome to Current State, Ted.
Good to be with you.
You write that the political left and the political right have in the past focused on different features of the correctional system. The left on the disproportionate number of people of color who are imprisoned, and the right on the very significant dollar costs associated with the state prison system. But you suggest that both sides may be coming closer together on the need for reforms. What's bringing them closer together?
Well, I think if there's one single underlying reason for that, it would be the cost, which has come on over a period, actually, of decades. And there's a realization, I think, especially, and maybe surprisingly to some, by some people on the political right, that if you want to look at it as sort of a business question, what's the bottom line? What are we getting for what we're spending? Does this make sense? Are there other ways to do this? Still keep our society safe and yet be more sensible with how we're spending our money. So to me, that's been the new element in the discussion of reform, is that you've got impetus now coming from the right to do this differently. And other states have already undertaken some pretty significant steps to reduce incarceration and reduce prison costs, to go to strategies other than building prisons to dealing with issues of crime. So I think that's kind of the new paradigm, if you will. It's come to fruition elsewhere. It has not reached that point in Michigan, and we'll see what happens down the road.
A little more context here. You point out that Michigan's prisoner population actually peaked back in 2006 and is now down about 8,000 inmates since then. You also refer to a Pew Center study from last year that found that Michigan's rate of incarceration fell 12% between 2007 and 2012. Why haven't those trends had a greater impact on cost? Is that clear?
Well, the cost would be greater, certainly, if the population had remained where it was in, I think it was 06, the peak of about 51,000.
Yes.
It's come down, but if you think about it logically, you've got costs, the whole cost of operating a prison, maintaining a prison, caring for the health care of prisoners, that's not going to go down. You've reduced the population, but those other costs are still wanting to push up. And a good part of what's driving that is the prison population is getting older. Older prisoners cost more to incarcerate. The health care costs, I think the numbers, if I'm looking at them here, prisoners age 35 to 39, it costs about $5,000 a year on average for health care. Prisoners 65, 69, you're up to $16,000. Those over 80, $40,000. And the Department of Corrections had assembled a list of the most expensive prisoners for health and or mental health care in the prison system, and I think they averaged about $220,000, the most expensive being over $300,000 for health care. So,
holy cow.
Yeah, that's part of it, and that's sort of part of what's driving this discussion of, does it make sense to keep prisoners, and these might be those who have even decades ago been involved in a violent crime, are we going to incarcerate them till they die if they're eligible for parole? And that, you know, that's to me sort of a combination philosophic, moral, and ultimately budgetary question. So
But this is an idea that is being more discussed among state leaders?
You know, there's been one person, and especially in the state house, Representative Joe Haveman out of Holland, who's been talking about this for several years now. Really, again, this is sort of emblematic of sort of the new way of thinking and some people coming from the conservative realm of politics. And he's been trying to push this discussion forward for several years. He's working on legislation he hopes to introduce this year that would allow the release of elderly prisoners to get them out of the prison system and into what would be basically nursing home care that would be out of the sphere of the Department of Corrections. So
where Medicaid would theoretically cover expenses?
That's the hope. And the state of Connecticut has started a program like this. I think it was begun in 2013. It's still on a relatively small scale, and it's pretty narrowly defined. It's supposed to be for prisoners who are believed to be terminally ill or severely incapacitated, that sort of thing. But that's the, you know, the beginning of a new way of thinking about what do we do with some of our elderly prisoners who are in perhaps for serious crimes, but on the other hand, don't really pose any sort of threat to society. So
we're talking with Bridge Magazine's Ted Roelofs about the challenges facing the Michigan correction system, in particular its exorbitant costs, and whether or not there's a better way to go about this. I know Attorney General Bill Schuette has come out strongly against early release of young convicts serving mandatory life sentences, but do we know where the Attorney General stands on the early release of these older, more infirm prisoners?
He has given, as far as I'm aware, no indication that that's the road he wants to walk down. I did put out some questions to his office in assembling this piece, and basically what I got back was representative of statements he's made in the past. He wants to remind people that there, in this whole discussion of reform, we must not forget the victims and their families, and so that, I think, is kind of driving his thinking on that, that, well, there's a risk to doing this, and let's not forget that this person committed this crime. If a person's released at his earliest release date, goes out, commits another crime, who are we accountable to for that action? So, and I think that's long been a dynamic in thinking about prison reform, because you get a single high profile case of a prisoner released, let's say at the earliest release date, had committed an earlier crime, goes out, and within a year or two or maybe 3 weeks commits another crime. That always gets a lot of media coverage, and that can sort of stop any debate right in its tracks about and that's one of the real difficulties of talking about serious reform, that, you know, there's always this, the other side of it, and the sort of the what if side of it, and you know, that's the delicate question of incarceration. But, you know, to take another step back from this, it might be worth asking, why is it that the United States incarcerates a bigger share of its population than any other country in the world? And why are we doing it this way, and why are the other countries doing it other ways? So, again, just to put it out there.
The state witnessed a number of reforms and other developments in the 80s and 90s that altogether toughened sentencing in Michigan and sentencing guidelines. Several suggestions on the table today would undo some of those moves. Let's talk about a few of those. Presumptive parole. What is presumptive parole?
Well, the idea there is, as it stands right now, with mandatory minimum sentencing, you're eligible for parole at your minimum release date. That has to be approved by the parole board. You need to present reasons for this. This is why this person should be released now. what often happens is it's denied, the person stays in prison, and that's why Michigan's length of incarceration is longer than most other states. It's a good reason why that's the case. Presumptive parole says you will be released at your earliest release date unless there's a compelling reason not to. So what you're going to end up with is prisoners are going to be, they're going to get out at that date. It also reinstates the good behavior reduction of prison time, which was eliminated with truth in sentencing.
Yeah, let's talk about truth in sentencing. That was one of the really memorable moves in the late 90s. And basically that was about ordering prisoners to serve at least their minimum sentence. You would say the pendulum is starting to swing in the opposite direction away from truth in sentencing reforms?
Well, there's discussion to let's take a look at this, and it hasn't, at this point, it's still at the discussion phase. There's talk about reinstating a sentencing commission to take a look at how Michigan sentences are guided. But that's something that would probably take a year or two to be to be put in place and to take effect. So at this point, there's more momentum to talk about this, but as you know from if you look at politics at all, big changes typically don't come overnight, and there's a lot of really tricky political issues to navigate for this to take place. So,
does the issue of rehabilitation come up in this discussion, Ted? Does anyone, for example, maintain that the prisons could rehabilitate more prisoners more quickly, perhaps, and improve this situation that way?
Yeah, I think that's long been thought to be. If you look at prisons as simply, here's this tough, bad place that we're putting people because they did things that we don't like, and then we're going to keep them there for 10, 20, 30 years, and then we're going to open the door and say, good luck. And, well, what's the net result of that? Are you getting a person who can contribute to society? Are you getting a person who, having no other way to really support himself, is more likely to come back in through those doors again? Again, there are other states that are doing more of this. The state of Texas, which adopted some pretty significant reforms in the past few years, they're doing more job training in prison, trying to make it easier for prisoners when they get out to reintegrate into society, as well as looking at other ways of dealing with nonviolent offenders and drug offenders. Also looking at reforms in parole that would tend to reduce incarceration. So it's part of there are many pieces to this. There's no magic bullet. There's no single answer. But there are certainly other places that are finding ways to reduce the flow coming in and those who can be safely released to find ways to navigate that, and also to try to reduce the likelihood that people are going to go into prison, go out, and then come back in again, the recidivism rate. So,
we're talking with reporter Ted Roloffs of Bridge Magazine about the proposed reforms to Michigan's correction system and what appears to be a growing sentiment to consider reforms. There's been a focus on outsourcing in recent years to cut costs. What place does outsourcing have in the future? Did that come up in your interviews?
We're talking about privatizing prisons, privatizing services?
Yes.
Yeah, that's out there, and I don't know. In the bigger picture, I don't know. You know, I think that had a lot of traction perhaps some years ago, that this is the way to save costs. But if you think about it, comparing, if you're going to privatize a prison and maybe you're going to reduce costs that way, the biggest driver of what this budget is going to be the number of prisoners that we have. And you get into wide-scale privatization, then you can ask the question, well, what's the track record of privatized prisons? In some cases, good. In other cases, not so good. So I don't know that significant prison reform in the context of finding a way to take the share of the general fund budget down from more than one-fifth, which is where it is right now, that's going to go real far if one only looks at privatization.
You mentioned earlier, Ted, that one of your key sources here was Republican State Representative Joe Haveman of Holland, who's a supporter of many of the reforms we've stirred up here. Has he indicated to you how encouraged he is about the legislature taking up any of these reforms, or does he feel more like a voice in the wilderness, or is he more encouraged than that?
Well, he's leaving after this year. He's exiting the House, and the way he put it to me is he's pretty passionate about this, but the way he put it to me is, yeah, I hope there's someone else that wants to pick this up, because I think he well knows that it's going to take concerted effort, it's going to take some coalition building and persistence. So I think he's encouraged and he's optimistic about what he's working on, but I also think he knows that once he leaves, we're looking at a difficult road ahead to achieve significant reform.
Ted Roelofs is a reporter for Bridge Magazine. Ted has three segments, three articles in the latest edition of Bridge, all related to Michigan's corrections system. They are recommended. Ted Roelofs, thanks for joining us.
Glad to do it.